Welcome to episode 82 of the Martin Bailey Photography Podcast. Today I'm going to answer another listener's question about how I figure out which lenses to buy that I received as a text message. And in fact, I've received pretty much the same question from Eric Wikander or Wikander and Jared Fain. I hope I'm pronouncing your guys' names properly. Forgive me if I'm not. But I've been asked this question a number of times from others too. And hopefully, based on that, this will be of some help to a number of people. So, first off though, let me paraphrase a little on what Eric and Jared said. And part of Eric's email, I'm going to get to a little bit of the rest of it at the end of the episode. But the general question was, what made you decide on the gear that you use, specifically lenses? Similarly, Jared wrote, for a while I've been meaning to write you with a suggestion for a podcast. Call it DSLR Lenses 101 or Primer on how to choose your next camera lens. It's easy to superficially understand that image quality and price go hand in hand. However, it's not really easy for an amateur like me to know how much one needs to spend in order to make decent images. Then it says photographer aside in parentheses. Jared goes on to say, for a serious amateur, how does one go about determining the cost to benefit ratio? Jared does go on to compare a few lenses from a newspaper ad and asks, how much better does the image get in relation to the increase in price when going for the better quality lenses? Well, I'm not going to go into these specific lenses as I don't have any experience with them. They're Nikon lenses, and as most of you know, I'm a Canon user generally. Probably through and through. But I try not to speak on specific things that I don't have direct or first-hand experience with. But what I am going to do, as we'll hear, is, you know, there is a quality trade-off that I'll talk about. And, you know, it's marginal in some cases and a little larger in others, but we'll generally get into that. Jared also asks if I know of any website that does like lens comparisons, kind of like DP Review do for the camera bodies. Well, before I go on, I'll just say that I don't. I've looked for this sort of site and I've never found one. So if anyone does know of a lens comparison website, please do let us know. The MVP forum would be a good place to start, but if not, you can mail me on info@martinbaileyphotography.com if you'd prefer, and I'll pass that on to the other listeners. So thanks very much to both Jared and Eric for the great questions. Let's get right into it. I've actually already done an episode on considerations when buying digital SLR bodies, and that was episode 64. And I've covered tripods, macro gear, extensions tubes, teleconverters and filters, and other stuff, lots of other stuff at some point. So I'm going to skip things other than lenses today. Eric's question did mention or hint on other stuff, but then pointed me back to mainly lenses. So that's what I'm going to talk about today. What I will do in the future, as I mentioned a few weeks ago, is an episode on things that I'd hate to be without, as kind of a catch-all for the remaining sort of bits and bobs, the gear that I use today, and really just, as I say, would not like to be without. But today I'm going to concentrate on the main common theme here, which is what to keep in mind when buying lenses. When I sat down to plan this, the first thing that came to mind was what John Arnold of the Photo Walkthrough podcast mentioned in episode 2 of the Focus Ring podcast. I'm recording this from memory, so it's not a word for word statement, but basically John said something like, most people get all excited on getting a new camera and want to buy some new lenses straight away, but if you don't know what you want, then, you know, if you don't know what you want to do with the lens, then hold off until you have a clearer picture. So the first thing that I want to say is that I really do totally agree with this. It's easy to get caught up in the gear game, and I'm probably guilty of giving many of you sort of gear envy, talking about the arsenal of lenses that I've built up over the years as well. The thing is, though, that I really have spent years building up my collection of lenses, and each and every one of them has its own place in my photography workflow. I'll get onto that more in a moment, but the first piece of advice is to really just reiterating John's. Don't just run out and buy a bunch of lenses just because someone else has one and you'd like one too. Now, please don't misunderstand what I'm saying here in agreeing with John's statement, or indeed, you know, please don't misunderstand the original statement. It's great that you are asking the questions. Just asking the questions, you know, what lenses should I buy? In a way, it's often not just the excitement of an unknowing beginner, but it's quite more often than not, I would imagine, a sign that you're getting to the point where you have a problem that needs fixing, but you don't quite know how to fix it or how to ask the questions about how to fix it. Being inquisitive is one of the most important things in learning, so please understand that we're not just sort of suggesting that you simply put up with your kit lens until you have some kind of epiphany and know exactly, irrefutably, what you need. But once you start asking the questions, hopefully the rest of what I have to say today will be of some help. Now, unless you have a truckload of disposable cash to spend, which I would think rules out pretty much all of us, everything you buy should have a purpose. You will have a real problem to solve, and adding the lens to your kit will help you to solve that problem. To explain, I'm going to first talk about the first three lenses that I bought when I got my my first SLR body, which was back in 1991, and I think I bought the last one in 92, or the second two in 92. But basically, when I first started using an SLR body, I got the very first lens was a 35 to 105 millimeter f 4.5 to 5.6 USM lens. And looking back, this was not a great lens, but it was acceptable. And this was, to me, you know, it was my main lens for the next 10 years. I used it with my EOS 100 film camera right up to and for a while after. I bought also my first digital SLR, which was the D30, not to be confused with the current 30D. This was actually a not a kit lens in the fact in as much as I bought it with a body. I bought the body really cheaply at a discount shop, and I picked up the lens at a local camera shop where I was living in Fukushima in northern Japan. But sure, the quality of the lens itself was pretty much what you'd have expected from a kit lens of that time. I think John actually went on to say something very similar to this, actually, but really the kit lens that comes with most consumer bodies at the moment will, at the very least, do a fine job. While you're getting used to your, you know, you're getting to know your gear, and it'll basically do you fine for most applications, you know, especially in the first years. For example, I don't know if this was the case worldwide, but in Japan you could buy the 20D with the 17-85mm EF-S lens as a kit. You know, I mean, that really isn't, it doesn't, the quality of that lens is not what people would call, you know, the derogatory term, a kit lens. It's an amazing piece of glass. It's very sharp, nice range, has image stabilization. And this lens knocks the hell out of my first lens, and you know, and that still saw me okay for 10 years. It's got a similar range when you when you think of the crop factor, when you calculate that in. So I'd have been very happy with that as my first lens. I hear that the 18-55mm and pretty much the standard sort of Canon kit lens is not brilliant, but it's probably still as good, if not better, than my first lens. So I know that you should still be able to get some great shots with it. The important thing to note here is that back in the film days, unless you were blowing your work up pretty large, it was not that easy to see the shortcomings of cheaper lenses. Once we entered the digital age and we started to be able to blow our images up to 100% on screen and examine the shot at the pixel level, it became much easier to see if the lens is not quite as good as you thought it was. We're rarely going to actually create prints that allow us to easily see that much detail, so it's very debatable as to how closely you should expect your inspect your shots, but the fact remains that it's now much easier to do so. Anyway, getting back to my first three lenses, the next step in my decision making was based on the fact that I soon realized that the widest focal length I had of 35mm was not wide enough for some landscape work that I wanted to do. So now, unlike the first lens, but based, the purchase was based really on nothing more than I needed something to cover everyday shooting, I now had a problem to solve, and this was the driving force behind my buying my second lens, which was a 24mm f2.8 prime lens. This lens, too, was in my camera bank for 10 years until I got my first DSLR. I actually really regretted selling this beautiful lens to put the money towards a new lens, as it was just a really nice piece of glass. This was more luck than judgment, though, the buying of this lens, as I still didn't really know all that much about photography and equipment. I just thought that 24mm was going to be wide enough, and it was it was an f2.8, so it was wider and a wider aperture than my current lens. I just about knew that much, but I wasn't really sure at the time what that would really mean to my photography, and I just thought it would, be something that would be cool to have. The most important thing, though, is that it was a nice, affordable lens. I think I only paid a few $100 for it at today's exchange rate. The next step was going the other way. I was finding that I wanted to get closer on the, closer to my subject on the telephoto range than my 105mm was allowing me to get. The next lens I added and the last lens purchase for 10 years was a 100-300mm f4.5-5.6 USM lens. This was really not a great lens at all. It produced very flat, low contrast images that, in hindsight, I'm amazed I was ever really happy with. But that was my skill level at the time, so I stayed with it. It was, it was there in my kit bag for 10 years. Now, when I say that was my skill level, I'm not only talking about compositional or artistic skills, I'm talking about technical skills. More specifically, the ability to look at my results and see what was wrong with them. I would see some shots look great in full daylight in certain conditions that sort of seemed to match the lens. The results would be fine. But then on other days in flatter light, I guess, but really in different light, some light lighting conditions, it would just really give bad results. And I didn't know how to sort of correct that, and I found that the lens itself, kind of blaming my tools to a certain degree, because of, like I say, I didn't know how to correct or how to find better light. But even just in everyday shooting, I found that the images were very flat, and I didn't know that it was the lens or myself, so I just really wasn't ready for anything more than that. So, like I say, this was my first three lenses for the first 10 years that I was shooting with an SLR body. Now when I ask myself why I was okay with that kit, I have to be honest that to a certain extent, this contented state could also have been called the bliss that is ignorance. I didn't know any better. Nowadays, you know, that we have a number of magazines thrusting the biggest and best down our throats all the time. We have the internet, we can get access to reviews, and there's these ingenious little portable devices that you can just throw in your pocket or hang around your neck and play radio programs on demand from podcasters like me, telling you about my newest lens and how cool it is. With the knowledge of, you know, what is available comes the temptation to blow all of your income on new kit. But again, when you think about it, when that knowledge wasn't there, I was fine with just these three lenses for 10 years and only bought new ones when there was a problem to solve. The next lens that I bought was the next time I had a problem to solve. After I bought my first DSLR, but due to the 1.6 times crop factor, I needed something wider than my 24mm prime that you know, that I bought 10 years previous, just to get anything reasonably wide. It was 10 years on. This was about 5 years ago, and there were no EFS lenses specifically designed for digital then, and the bodies didn't support them even if there was. So the only choice that I had was a 17-35mm f2.8L lens. And I really was kicking myself because this was right at the time when the 16-35mm lens had just been brought out, and I just couldn't convince my other half to let me to go the extra few hundred dollars for that one. I upgraded it later, but we'll get to that later. This was my first L lens, and you know, then what happened? I realized just how crap my 35 to 105 millimeter had been, and even more to the point, I realized how crap my 100 to 300 millimeter lens had been. All of a sudden, I could see images, although I was shooting with my D30 still, which was a 3 megapixel DSLR. I could examine photos much more closely, as I said earlier. So I was no longer ignorant to the reality that more expensive glass makes better photos. This, though, doesn't change the fact that I had a whole bunch of decent photos with my old lenses, and some of them are still my favourites today. And more to the point, those 10 years, although there were a number of years, like I went to college over here in Japan, I didn't have the money to develop film, so I had a number of blanks throughout that time, but those 10 years were really my sort of learning, my real major learning phases. I just spent a lot of time shooting things with the limited kit that I had, and it was great. You know, the real sort of catch 22 situation is, though, that, you know, it brings me back to what John said: if you don't know what you want, wait until you do. And I'd say I was probably happier when I didn't know what I wanted, anything else that I wanted, than I am now when there are so many things that sort of tempt us. So there are now, though, so many ways to know and learn what you want. There were back then, but I just wasn't that into it, or I wasn't sort of in the environment that thrust them upon me. But really now, you know, there's so many different ways. As I said, the internet, there's magazines, ads everywhere. TV now as well. I don't recall seeing television commercials the way I do now, thrusting digital SLRs down our throats. I just didn't see that 10 years ago. So I'll say again, though, you really should just wait until you have a problem to solve. And this will more than likely be related to focal length to begin with. But then there's a number of options within the focal lengths of the lens that you're considering that must be considered before parting with your hard-earned. And this is where Jared, and I would say most of us, are right now. It's not so much which lens to buy, but whether or not to make it makes sense to go for the expensive glass or buy something of a similar focal length but much cheaper. Before we can talk about that, let's look at some of the differences between cheaper and more expensive lenses. What do you get for that extra money? Okay, so typically the first thing is going to be wider apertures, or what are sometimes called brighter lenses. The more expensive lenses get, generally, the better engineered they are. So you're going to get more dust and weatherproofing, etc. And it's usually more expensive to get lenses with image stabilization or vibration reduction. So once you've identified a focal length of a range of the, you know, the length that you want, and you're online or in a store looking at the the options, you can start to ask yourself if you need an extra stop or two of brightness that a wider lens, a wider aperture lens, will give you, so that you can shoot, say, for example, in darker conditions and still have your autofocus work well. Or you might want to have a little extra bokeh, that, you know, the out of focus area of a shot that you get from a wider aperture. Or do you usually shoot with the aperture closed down to f8 or so anyway? You can also ask yourself whether or not your shooting will benefit from image stabilization. Not wanting to sway your decisions at all here, though, but I can say for sure that until you've tried image stabilization, you might not understand what all the fuss is about. But once you have, most people start wondering how they did without it for so long. You probably should just ignore that last statement. Anyway, these things are all questions that you can start to ask yourself with regards to these sort of options. Unfortunately, there's more to think about once you're in the know. And now, I know that some people are going to pull me up on this, but having worked through various lenses over the years and now having some of the best lenses available for comparison, I can tell you that without a doubt, in most cases, you're going to get better image quality with the higher end, i.e. more expensive lenses. And that, you know, that's why they're more expensive. Depending on what you're comparing, the lenses that you're comparing, the difference in image quality could be anything from marginal to exceptional. But you really do get what you pay for. Generally, you'll get crisper images with better contrast and resolution and depth. The reason for this is because the manufacturers often add more elements or elements of a shape that's more expensive to manufacture, which helps the lens to bend the light in a more pleasing way and reduce distortion. Many more expensive lenses have UD elements to reduce refraction and dispersion of the light passing through the lens. UD stands for ultra low dispersion, and these elements are a very close substitute to fluorite lenses, and fluorite is very expensive. Some lenses actually do use fluorite, which bumps the cost up quite considerably. The ones that I can think of offhand are the Canon range of telephotos from the prime telephotos from 300mm and above. These are all exceptionally good lenses. The quality is just uncomparable to, say, if we're talking about, say, the 300mm f2.8 or the 4-5-600 f4s. It's really just not that, you know, the images are in a different class to those that you will get from similar lenses that aren't L-glass, and they're even better than the 304mm range of the 100-400mm zoom lens. This is partly because of the fact that a zoom lens is always going to be less quality, a lower quality than a prime lens, but also because they're using these fluorite elements within the lens, and they're generally just manufactured, engineered in a much better way. And that is why they're extremely expensive. If these lenses didn't produce that good an image, even at like the 500 and 600 millimeter range, they just wouldn't be that expensive. Because of this, though, these really aren't the sort of lenses that we run out and buy very often, or for most of us, not at all. In the digital age and an age where advertising is everywhere, keeping check of temptation is difficult. It's more difficult than ever. And I still tell myself every so often that I shot with these three lenses for 10 years. And I try to hold off on purchases until I really can't reasonably work around not having that particular lens anymore. But, you know, now that I've told you what you most feared, and that is that, you know, that image quality does get better as you spend more money, do you really need to take out a second mortgage to fully equip yourself with top quality lenses? Of course you don't. In addition to continuing to ask yourself questions on your planned additions, take stock of where you are in your learning of photography. I've heard people griping on a number of occasions that they bought a nice new L lens that cost them a fortune, but the image quality is really not what they expected. And then when you look at their images, you know, the lens is fine. The photographer themselves is at fault. For example, some people get sort of all carried away at their first f2.8 aperture lens and shoot a load of shots and then scream that everything is out of focus. Well, really what's happening is that the person has never really had to focus very precisely before because they've been using f4.5 to 5.6 lenses until now. And these smaller aperture lenses have a much deeper depth of field, even when used wide open. So a certain amount of focusing error doesn't make that much difference. But when you focus on someone's face with an f2.8 lens, for example, if it's wide open and you're focused on the nose, then the eyes might well be out of focus because they're out of the depth of field. It's amazing how many people focus on the nose, though. Even, you know, I don't know if it's on purpose or just because they don't think about it. Maybe the camera, if you're using multiple focus points and you're just on automatic, then the camera's going to automatically try and focus on the closest thing if it has something, a line or something that it can get some contrast from. So it may well be automatic, but it's amazing the amount of people that focus on a nose. But when shooting with a wide open aperture, you have to get the focus on the eyes and then, you know, recompose the shot as necessary. That means usually to, like, you know, select a certain focus point or something like that, and then, you know, use that to actually, you know, to get that little click on the eyes, the little red dot in the finder, and then recompose. But you'll find that many people, as well, even once you get that technique down, you'll find that many people subconsciously rock backwards and forwards as you breathe if you're standing up, or even sitting down, I guess. If you're hand-holding, many people will rock backwards and forwards very slightly. And, you know, so even if you move after focusing before you release the shutter, you're going to, again, lose the focus on the eyes and you're going to be griping because your new f2.8 lens doesn't focus very well. It's not the lens. So another problem is, I've noticed, and this is really not to do so much with the better quality lenses, but just as another example, people that buy long lenses, say up to a 300mm or sometimes more, they often complain because their shots are blurred. And you know, this time, rather than a focus error, it's camera shake. But they don't realize that longer focal lengths intensifies any movement in the camera during the exposure. So, you know, they continue to shoot at, say, f8 for a 60th of a second, despite now shooting with a 300mm lens and maybe even with a crop factor camera. So even with image stabilization, you're going to get a lot of failures when shooting at these shutter speeds at an equivalent of 480mm. Now, I'm not going to go into detail of techniques to overcome these issues today, as I've covered most of this in previous episodes. And after all, they're just examples of problems that people go through when getting used to new gear. The important thing to understand here is that no matter how much money you spend on your equipment, you're only going to be able to use it to the best of your current or near future ability. One of the things that you can try to give yourself is a realistic feel of whether or not something is out of your current ability range. And that is if you have a rental store that is not too far away from you. You can try renting the lens that you are thinking of buying for a few days or a week or so and take it out for a test. You know, maybe if you're going on a holiday, you know, you're going to be away for a few weeks even. It might still work out financially viable to just rent something just to give it a really good try before you take the plunge. And, you know, this will be kind of throwaway money if you go ahead and buy the lens. But if you, you might find out that it helps to put your mind at rest before the purchase, which is in itself worth something, I think. And or it could possibly prove to you that you're not yet ready for that particular piece of kit. It's not usually all that expensive to rent lenses, and whether you decide to buy or not, I'm sure you'll have fun trying out the new lens. Make sure that you push yourself technically, though, while you have it, so that you can really understand where you might need to improve once you get the lens, because it is a learning experience. And as I said earlier, you know, it's going to test your current but also near future ability. So once you've identified problems, it doesn't always mean that you should just give up, and hopefully it will mean that it'll just become a challenge for you and you'll go ahead anyway and overcome the difficulties. But knowing them beforehand will make a big difference. One other piece of advice that has been mentioned a number of times in one form or another, and was also brought up, I think, by Jeff Curto in the same Focus Ring podcast that I mentioned earlier, is if you're considering buying a prime lens before you take the plunge, you can try taking one of your current lenses, if you have one that covers the same focal length, and then just sort of tape up the focus ring on, you know, on the lens to the focal length that you are considering buying. Do that for a day or so, and you can see how it feels shooting at just that focal length. Of course, you're not going to be able to check the additional image quality that prime lenses usually provide by doing this, but prime lenses also often, you know, they'll limit people more than they might at first think, and forcing yourself to use just that focal length can help you make the decision as to whether or not a particular focal length is, you know, as a prime lens is for you at all. You know, you might decide that it's just really not for you and you prefer the freedom of a zoom. If you can't try out lenses in one way or another before you buy it, though, and you have all the information to make a decision on a new focal length or zoom range to enable you to shoot images that you can't currently shoot but would either like to or may even need to shoot for some reason, and the only decision left is whether or not to go for the best lens in that class or, you know, a cheaper alternative, then here's my advice. If your budget will stretch to the best glass that you can buy, and you are sort of ambitious, and you know, even if you find that your skill level is not quite there, if you're ambitious and you're able to spend the time to learn any new techniques that might be necessary, then go for it. That's simply that. You know, if you can afford it, then go for it. If, however, you don't want to or you simply can't afford to go for the more expensive glass, then don't sweat that either. Stick with your kit lens or a few cheaper lenses to cover your working range until your skill level and, you know, basically demands that you upgrade. The dilemma is that with all of this information, you'll now know that if you go for the cheap lens at this point, then in a few years' time, when you find that you do want to upgrade, you might think that you've wasted a lot of the cost of the cheaper lens. Well, this is only partially true, though. Firstly, you know, like a car or a washing machine or any other piece of equipment that we buy for everyday life, as we use it, we're getting something back for our investment. It might be much easier to talk your other half into letting you buy a new washing machine or a new car. But putting that aside, every time we use these things, we're getting something back on our investment. So if you spend, say, $400 on a relatively nice but not top-of-the-range zoom lens, and you use it for just 2 years, say, that's only actually costing you $17 a month. And I know that that might be a lot for some people, but you know, it, even if you say if you sell the lens at the end of those 2 years to put the money towards a newer one, then you know it's going to cost you even less. So I don't think that the cost of your starter lens is a throwaway expense. Selling your old gear and putting the money towards the newer gear is something that you might want to consider. I pretty much always do this. I have actually just upgraded my 16 to 35mm f2.8 lens for the newer version released at the end of March 2007. The reason for the upgrade was because although I was happy with the old version, the edges of the lens were a little soft and it was generally overly distorted. I have a few great shots of trees that I have never been able to use because the detail just wasn't there around the edges. So, you know, this was really to the point where I've stopped even shooting these sort of shots sometimes just because I get disappointed when I see the results. But Canon has redesigned this lens with less distortion and sharper edges. And I've done a few test shots and I'm really, really pleased that I sort of switched. But I justified this, probably more to myself than anything else, but I justified the decision to make this switch right away with the fact that if I sell my old version now, I'll get more money for it than in a month or two when the second-hand market is flooded with the previous version. I took my old lens to a local store that buys second-hand lenses. It's the same store that I bought the 16 to 35mm f2.8, the original lens from, and they gave me just under $1,000 for my old one. And they had the new version in for just under $1,500, which means that I got to upgrade for less than $500. And I know that that's a lot of money, but this is, it's one of those things. The lens performance of this lens is really critical for me getting these, the best quality, like fine art photos that I can get. I'd say that in a few months, if I go back to the store, then, you know, because the market will be flooded, I'll get less for my lens, even though it was in pristine condition, and probably I'm going to be paying more like $700 or $800 for the same switch. So really, it's just a matter of time. So you know, I did, like I say, I got so much for my lens because it was in really just perfect condition, and this is something to bear in mind if you are going to be selling on your lenses or any old equipment to buy new stuff. I always keep the boxes and cases and manuals for my lenses, and I probably use my gear pretty much too much with kid gloves most of the time. I'm not too worried about getting things dirty or wet, but when that happens, I always wipe them down thoroughly before putting them away, and I rarely allow my kit to sort of clang together as I see some people doing. So the exterior is usually pretty much scratch-free. The exception is my 100 to 400 millimeter f4.5 to 5.6L lens, which I have given a bit of a beating over the years. Putting it into the stone bag of my tripod while using it as a second body while shooting wildlife, it's usually the pace of shooting is so fast that I don't have time to treat it the way I'd like. But I'm going to justify this sloppiness by saying that I really don't think I'll ever be replacing this lens. But I'm going to contradict myself immediately, because if Canon turns around and says that they've got an updated version of that that's perhaps a little sharper, then I'd probably consider it. I'd probably say that that goes for any of the gear that I have right now, though. Having gotten to this point, I realise that before we finish, I have to answer Eric's question, which was, what made you decide on the gear that you use, specifically lenses? So with the number of lenses that I've owned over the years, I'm not going to go into details about my old ones, but here's a quick rundown of my current inventory, and you know, I'll sort of interject some thoughts on why I bought them in addition to the advice that I've already given. We're coming up to 40 minutes now, I can see on my recording software, so I'm going to make this a little bit quick, but just to sort of be thorough in answering the question, let's just go through my current arsenal. So I mentioned earlier why I bought the 17-35mm. That's an old lens. I upgraded to the 16-35 when I found that I was just really not happy with the 17-35. I was starting to compare it to the sharpness of the non-L lens, the 17-85, and I just found that that lens was so sharp that it, you know, I started to get frustrated with the old one. And I was shooting again, pretty similar to for my reason to upgrade the 16-35 to the version 2, was that there was just a little softness in some areas, and I was just generally getting frustrated and was able to sort of sell the old ones on at such a good price that it made it irresistible. I have to admit that when I moved to the 17, from the 17-35 to the 16-35, because that lens had only been out for a few years, I didn't dream that Canon would upgrade it, and I thought that that was sort of the bee's knees in that range anyway. All of the reviews were really, really good. But again, as with many things, in hindsight, things that we think are great at the time turn out not to be so great when we have something even better to compare it with. So that was that one. Originally, like I said, it was the crop factor that did it. I wanted something wide with a 1.6 times crop factor camera. But that might lead you to ask, you know, if I still have a, you know, why do I still have a super wide angle zoom now that I'm using a 35mm full frame digital SLR, especially as I also own a 24-105mm f4 lens, which goes as wide as my original 24mm f2.8 lens. Well, this is really because my photography has progressed to the point where I still want to be able to shoot really wide vistas. I also find that these super wide angle lenses are great for sort of shooting up at the bottom of a from the bottom of a tree, or between buildings, and sort of using really sort of distorted perspective to make it look like the trees or the buildings are sort of falling in on you. Another thing that I do more now is getting really close to a primary subject, as these lenses focus at just under a foot, but then I use that very wide angle again to throw everything in sort of a really strange sort of perspective, and you know, the rest of the scene just looks pretty wacky. In short, it's another artistic option for making photos. I bought the 100mm f4 4.5-5.6L lens before my first trip to Hokkaido, and I was hoping to shoot both landscapes and wildlife on that trip, and this was really the lens that enabled me to get serious about wildlife photography. Until then, I'd been shooting with the 100-300mm lens, and this was really just not a very good lens, as I said. Newer versions of the 70-300mm IS lenses are now great by comparison, I've heard. And if you don't want to splash out for the more expensive 100-400mm, or you don't want the additional weight, I believe that these newer lenses are very close in image quality and can be a very valid alternative. I use the 24-105 f4 lens as a general catch-all lens. I keep this on my camera when I'm just out and about, and as it's an L lens, it's sharp enough for just about anything that I want to do within the focal length range. I bought the 50mm f1.4. This is not an L lens, but a few years ago I picked up a 50mm f1.4 for the exceptional bokeh that this lens has. It's a little soft, it's very soft actually when used wide open, but incredibly fast, and out of focus areas are just really sweet. There's the specialty lenses like the 24mm TSE or tilt shift lens, which I bought again for artistic reasons. Of course I wanted to be able to sort of straighten the straighten buildings, architecture, and also it's very useful in landscape work as well, but I often take this lens out with me just when I'm sort of going on a shopping trip or something, and just use it to throw a totally surreal angle on the world. In fact, I shot a reasonable image on the main street in Harajuku here in Tokyo on Saturday, under just such conditions. And as I haven't included any images today, I'll throw this one in just an example. It's image number 1370. It's just a little bit of eye fodder there. Macro lenses are a little bit specialist as well. The MP E65mm 1-5x f2.8 lens, much more so than the 100mm f2.8. I own both. The 100mm is relatively inexpensive but incredibly sharp, and doubles as a portrait lens as well, a nice telephoto. I can recommend it to anyone thinking of trying macro photography, but who's realized that when it says macro in the name of a standard zoom, it doesn't really mean macro. Macro photography, though, is one of those areas that people can quickly get discouraged in, as there's a pretty steep learning curve at the beginning. You know, still, once you've gotten over that that initial pain, you know, once you get the hang of things, it opens up a whole new world that is not accessible without a macro lens. The 70-200mm f2.8 lens was one that I found it very hard to justify for so long. I had the range covered and I was managing without the additional stop of aperture. But so many people swore by this lens, and you know that it. I just really couldn't keep myself from buying one for any longer. I had a few old camera bodies, namely the 10D, the 20D, and the 17-85mm EF-S lens that would no longer be of any use to me without the 20D. So I decided that it was time to take the plunge, and I've not really looked back at all. I've owned this lens for about 9 months now, but I'm using it more than any other lens still. I'd heard so many people call this lens their workhorse, and it really is. It's incredibly bright and sharp, and it's just a great image stabilization as well. It's not a huge zoom range, but to be able to get out to 200mm at f2.8 has really opened up a lot of artistic areas to me that I simply didn't have before. Not to mention just using it as a great all-round lens. Finally, the 600mm f4. This behemoth of a lens took a lot of thinking about. Not only because of the ridiculous, but I believe justifiably high price tag, but because of the size and the weight, I was really torn between this and the 500mm f4 as well. The 500mm is a few grand cheaper and a little lighter too, so I was very tempted, but I figured that if I was going to go that far, that I might as well go with the extra 100mm to enable me to fill the screen with smaller wildlife, or even the, the red-crowned cranes that I shoot when they're a little further away. Animals, even big animals, don't have to get very far away from you, and they start to get pretty small in the frame unless you've got a lot of magnification. So I was basing my decision on the facts at hand. I'd shot the cranes with the 400mm lens at full extent with my 10D and 20D, which have the crop factor, which means I've been shooting them at the maximum of 400. That's the equivalent of 640mm. And the thing is that I know that this still didn't get me as close as I'd like to be sometimes, and I didn't want to go any shorter than that. Plus, I would always still have the 100-400mm as well, just as a backup. But the 500mm f4 with, say, a 1.4x extender was also an option. And I really, I already owned the extender, and I thought that the combination was still only going to be like 700mm. You know, I mean, some people there that would like these lenses are probably going to be sitting there calling me all the names under the sun for saying only 700 millimeters. But, you know, I knew that I wanted to sketch closer still. With the 600 millimeter f/4 and the 1.6, the 1.4 extender, I was talking 840 millimeters, and that was just 50 millimeters less than the 100 to 400 millimeter with the 1.4 extender at full extent on a crop factor camera. But I'd have autofocus, which you lose with the 100 to 400 millimeter and any extender, and it was going to be much, much sharper just because of the higher quality 600 millimeter prime and its UD and fluorite lenses. And, you know, I really, the deal was done. I'd sold my soul to the missus on, you know, the fact that I'd get our savings topped back up by a certain point, and the rest is history. So I hope that that's been of some help. Thanks again to Eric and Jared for your great questions. Before we finish, I just wanted to share some of the kind words that these guides also included in their communication. In addition to the questions, that is, Eric also wrote, "I too shoot nature photography. There's just something about getting out there and taking pictures. I've really enjoyed your show so far. You give education and share knowledge with your audience. This is something that others forget to do. Thank you for taking your time to do these podcasts, although I have no idea where you find the time." Well, to be honest, Eric, you know, I don't know how I make the time either. But most of us can make the time to do the things that we enjoy or we feel important, or both. And this podcast, to me, has become a very important part of my life, and I do enjoy it. I not only have come into contact with a great bunch of people and new listeners through this, but also, you know, it's helped me to structure my own knowledge of photography through the planning that I do each week, you know, to enable me to say the things that I record. So it's definitely not a one-way relationship. You know, it's fun and it's rewarding. So that's basically why I make the time. So by the way, Eric has included a link to some of his images on P-Base, and there are some really good shots. So I'll drop a link to Eric's photos in the show notes in case you want to take a look for yourself. Jared also went on to say, "I would like to take this opportunity to thank you for a fantastic job with your podcasts and your websites. You stimulated my interest, improving and growing my photography, which resulted in my purchase earlier this year of my first DSLR, a D70S, for which I'm most grateful. I try to post photos weekly on the members gallery, as I know this will force me to work harder on them. Thanks for these kind words, Eric and Jared. You know, it's very, very much appreciated. Remember that there is now just 1 week, less than 1 week now at the time of recording, for the Simplicity assignment. If you haven't got your entry in yet, please do upload it to the Simplicity album on the mbpgalleries.com website no later than the end of your Sunday, the 15th of April. Voting will start from Monday the 16th for 2 weeks to find out who the winner of one of my original prints will be. And this is the big one. This is the one that will find out who will scoop the amazing Lopro Stealth Reporter D650 AW camera bag that Lopro have been kind enough to offer us as a prize. And with that, I guess, wow, that's a lot. I think this is maybe the longest podcast I've ever done. It's just going over 54 minutes. But with that, I guess all that remains to be said is thanks for listening and have a great week, whatever you have planned. Bye-bye.
PhotocastNetwork.com, your photography resource in the podosphere. PhotocastNetwork.com.